couple weeks ago, I began this session on the subject of starting points. And I'm going to kind of summarize. Here's where we're headed. If there were five couples, and all the five couples began at exactly the same place from the day they got married, you could assume that they would all pretty much go the same direction, have the same basic success. All things, this whole title is All Things Being Equal. It doesn't take you long as a pastor to realize all things aren't equal. By the way, for 2 weeks, that's all we've talked about. All things aren't equal for lots of different reasons. So couple A, instead of both of them starting here, it could be one starts here and one starts way back here because of circumstances, different variables in life. Couple B, maybe one starts right here and one starts here. Well, it's going to be a whole bunch easier for them to make up ground and to move forward. The analogy is all things are never equal in marriage. They just aren't. Now, here's where I want us to start and move forward. We're going to talk about hard things today. I'm not going to be harsh, but it is hard to accept, and I don't know why. If I talked to my best friend this week for an hour about this. I talked to my wife about this. Now, some of you take a deep breath. Okay, you get that deep breath? Because where we're going is not easy for some people. For other people, it's the easiest thing in the world. There are people in this room that if I asked you about your family, you would lie for hours. Some of you would even add religion to the line. There's other people that have no problem reconciling. They have no problem telling you, I started right here. Why that is, that's a question I'm not going to answer because I can't figure it out. I don't understand why any Christian wouldn't look at reality as it is so then they can start going someplace. So, by the way, my best friend's dad, Carrie Allen, his father, came back from World War II and crawled into a bottle. He never had a job after age 30 that was anything more than hit or miss. He lived in a bottle his whole life. Now, let me ask you a question. Why can my best friend, he said, when I got saved, I come to understand my father, came to understand what he was like, why he was like that, and he said, I was able to move right forward past that. Why do other people will lie their entire life? Wasn't that bad? Doesn't affect me? I don't know. You'll have to figure that out. And by the way, you'll have to figure out where you're at in this mix. Because I'm not going to go to you individually. Now, what we did over the last week or so, we have started talking about what are some of those factors. One of those factors we said was personality. Frankly, in a relationship, some people's personality is just better than others. Some people's personality works better in relationships. And by the way, some of you start here, and then there's me that's somewhere about right here when it comes to the personality side. I'm somewhat prickly. Is that the right word? Amy, where's Amy at? Then there's that thing called history. And that's about where we're at, folks. I don't know what page it's on. We talked about the sources of dysfunction. And by the way, when I talk about dysfunction, I'm using the term how. Does anybody remember? Descriptively. I'm not saying you're evil. I'm simply saying this is the way life is. You look at your history. If you came from a history, as I say in your notes, violence was one of them. I think I talked about drunkenness or drugs has big impact on dynamics. Folks, please look at me. If you came from a home where there was major drinking going on, you already know something about the home. When there's a problem, what do people do? Thank you. They don't communicate, solve problems, fix things, talk about stuff, right? Oh, there's only one worse that's more damning than that. If you come from that kind of background and you put religion on it. Sharon Vasilovich told me in every highly dysfunctional family that she's ever experienced in her entire life, and unfortunately I agree with her, there's one common denominator, a mother that is religious covering up dysfunction. And I have never seen an exception. Not the father. Why not the father? Somebody tell me why not the father. because the father's away doing other stuff. He's not with the family. He's not teaching the dynamics of how we relate. Got it? Now, you say, I don't like to hear that. I already told you, this is not pleasant. I'm not pointing to anybody. We're talking about trying to come to grips. By the way, I told Sharon this week, as we were talking about this, I said, Sharon, I have a basic understanding of this passage. You can't really forget and move forward until you're able to remember and look in the face where you come from. Some of us, that doesn't bother me. And we're dragging a baggage train behind us. Okay. Violence, drunkenness, crime, molestation, incest, divorce, desertion, death, war, trauma, traumatic events, long-term illness, dysfunctional parents, all of that. Again, none of this is meant to be used pejoratively or to harm. This is descriptive. It talks about the fact that we have family dynamics that don't function well. You don't learn the normal things of reconciliation and talking through problems, working through things. Maybe one person screams and goes hides in the bedroom, and the other person goes into a hissy. Haven't you ever been around this? It's weird when you watch Christians and you realize you haven't really learned biblical teaching, because, and if you put religion on top of that, there's no hope. To be honest with you, until you tell the truth, there's absolutely no hope. Because I think Jesus says, you shall know the, and the truth shall set you free. Nothing else. All right. Well, last week we began the subject of, I said in your notes, a defining symptom or characteristic of a dysfunctional family dynamic. How, this is one of the things that's glaring to me, so I want to pick up here again. It's the subject of humor. You never, ever see a dysfunctional family that does well with the subject of humor. You either have only humor, or you have basically no humor. And I'm going to repeat this because I find this so common. If you look in your notes, by the way, there are some verses there about a merry heart doeth good. A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance. That's the first verse. But by the sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken. There's just something about having a merry heart. That comes from within. It affects that which is without. 15:15. All the days of the afflicted are evil. But he that is of a merry... Again, we're not talking about smiling. We're not talking about fakeism. We're talking about what comes from within has a continual feast. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. Last week I started talking about no humor. First thing I would say, as I said last week, this group doesn't get humor. If they do get it at all, it's to abuse and misuse humor. Now, I did something this morning. Everyone look at me, please. Now, my daughter will know, so she can't answer. John will know, he can't answer. What did I do to Jerry Milburn this morning? Did you understand the humor? What was the point of the humor? The point of the humor was the op... What? Well, yeah, maybe it was some abuse. Come to think of it. By the way, may I say this to all of you before he interrupts again? You do realize that if I have to explain that to you, we got a problem. There are people in this room that are wondering why I said that about Jerry. Do you not understand if I said that about Jerry, I actually meant the opposite? But people that don't get humor, see, humor is used to abuse and misuse and put people down. And you, please explain that. And what did that mean? I've already said also, you must explain the humor. Now, if you wonder about your family, by the way, I'll give you a secret. Please don't look at your own family and decide if your family is healthy. Have someone that you don't know observe your family. Noel, you and Pastor Charlie and I were at McDonald's observing a family. Remember 3 or 4 weeks ago? We watched a family come in. I watch families all the time. I didn't know this family. There was a mom, a couple teenage kids, and maybe one a little less than teenage kids. We watched that family not like, but obliquely, You know, after 30 or 45 minutes, you know how much you know about a family? Oh, look at me. Mom wasn't off in la-la land. Dad wasn't talking on the phone. Kids weren't plugged in for 30, 45 minutes. What, they talked? Laughed? I didn't have to know the family. It was a healthy family, just from observation. Nobody hiding in bedrooms. Mama not in the kitchen stressing out. Dad not sleeping in the TV room. Communication. Kind of the normal stuff people do. Well, on the opposite side, of course, is the people that only have humor. You see this with a lot of comics. I pretty much think that whole world is filled with that. I'm going to read something from a biography. This is a horrific biography, so I'm not going to recommend it. It's horrific. It's filthy from beginning to end. And I read it because it so much demonstrates what I'm saying. Have you ever met, when I first came to this church, there was a lot of this kind of humor in this church, where people couldn't shut the humor up. If you got to laugh the first time, we got to tell 8 jokes. By the way, folks, they can't, with this kind of humor, you can't be serious. Everything is what? Rodney Dangerfield, whose real name is Jacob Cohen. By the way, the entire book's a joke. He tries to write a biography. He can't even not joke about his life. Everything is a joke. Here's his first statement. My grandfather was almost never referred to in that house. Oh, we'll get to that today. Rumor has it he's still in Hungary and still drinking. My dad wasn't around much either. I found out much later that he was a ladies' man. Dad had no time for kids. He was always out making new kids. I feel awkward referring to him as dad. When you hear that word, you picture a man who looks forward to spending time with his family. A man who takes his son camping or to a ball game every once in a while. My father and I did none of those things. He didn't live with us. Show business kept him on the road practically all the time. Or was it my mother? I figured out that during my entire childhood, my father saw me two hours a year. He says, although I didn't realize it at the time, my childhood was rather odd. I was raised by a mother who ran a very cold household. I never got a kiss, a hug, or a compliment. Of course, by the way, compliments are real hard in dysfunctional homes. And if they do get compliments, the compliments are inappropriate. You know, by the way, in churches, direct disobedience to Scripture, that religious mother is complimenting the children for that. I'm so happy that you're living with your boyfriend. The compliments are like, huh? I never got a kiss, a hug, or a compliment. My mother wouldn't even tuck me in. Forget about kissing me goodnight. On my birthdays, I never got a present, a card, nothing. I guess that's why I went into show business, to get some love. I wanted people to tell me I was good, tell me I was okay, let me hear the laughs, the applause. I'll take love any way I can get it. Can I tell you something? Every comic I have ever met is identical to that. Every single one. In your notes. That's enough of that kind of material. We'll go down beneath the verses. By the way, when I say humor, I better go to what I call having just what ought to be healthy humor in a family. There ought to be this. I think that's spelled right. Repartee, Mrs. Warren? You have to speak because I can't hear you. Banter. I think this is spelled right too. You all understand this kind of stuff? Do I have nicknames for people? Pretty much everybody. Pretty much everybody. Hold on, I want to ask you another question about the nicknames. Do you think I'd ever call somebody a nickname and mean something by it other than what? Affection. When I give somebody a nickname, that means I like them. That's affection. Oh, by the way, if you come from a dysfunctional family, if you give somebody a nickname, it's something like, stupid! Yes? By the way, folks, this stuff has impact. Again, humor is one of the places, if you want to know what I look at, I start looking at humor in a family. If humor is right and proper, there's smiling, there's interaction, there's the repartee, there's the banter, there's these little nicknames of affection. That is what godly, healthy humor looks like. If you don't get humor, or if you're always, everything is hilarious. No, there's time to be serious. There's some definite times to be serious. In your notes, I have to qualify everything I've said. Obvious, there are exceptions. There are exceptions to this. People that have certain kinds of physical ailments, autism, Asperger's syndrome, some of those things, humor doesn't come through to them very well. I say this too, dysfunctional families might laugh at jokes, especially put-downs. And by the way, especially if they're put-downs of someone else, we definitely like those kind of jokes. By the way, Roman, do you have a chair back there, buddy? You don't have a chair. Somebody give him a chair and bring him a chair back here. Mike, please. Thank you. In your notes, they certainly, dysfunctional people almost never get self-deprecating humor. You say, Pastor, I don't even know what self-deprecating means. I don't either. It would sound like a good word, though. You'd have to get somebody that knows how to spell it, and that's not me. Another defining symptom or characteristic of dysfunctional families, and I'm going to confess, this is a very tough one, is enmeshment. When I look at a family, it doesn't take you long, years and years and years, to figure out what's going on in the family. And everything I've said this last week and this week, by the way, and I'm going to finish up today, I can tell what goes on in your family without visiting your home. This makes people nervous. This isn't secret. One of the big ones is this concept of enmeshment. You see, I don't know what that word means either. Well, enmeshment has this idea of the family is somehow improperly connected. There is, well, I'll just give you a description of all of this. What does this look like? Well, one person, and you fill in the word, cries, is depressed, knows, the entire family cries, is depressed, or knows. Do you understand what that means? That means there are shared emotions. Look at me, folks. My son's here, my daughter's here, and my wife's here. If Ralph Warren is depressed, my son will never be depressed because he would never know I'm depressed. Why would I share with my son? Enmeshed families, dysfunctional families. He's upset, I'm upset, she's upset, she's upset. He's unhappy, I'm unhappy, she's unhappy, she's unhappy. The emotions are shared. Does this sound like your family? Then Houston, you have a problem. And Houston, you're going to have problems in marriage. First characteristic of one of the primary is the family's too enmeshed. My goodness, you speak to John, he cries. Within 30 seconds, he's called everybody in his family, and they're all crying in an enmeshed family, dysfunctional. You say, why? Because they, well, we'll get to that. Nothing is personal. Next page. I'm going to say much of this all the same. There is no private space, whether that space is physical or emotional. In normal, healthy families, there is private space. You don't feel like you have to share every feeling with everybody else. All emotions are shared. Now, understand something. When your children are young, I was looking at Tim Klinkenbeard's lovely children this morning. When your children are this young, the children normally come to the parents and share their emotions. But the parents don't share their emotions with the kids. But in dysfunctional families, everything is shared. So I already know a dysfunctional family because everybody has exactly the same emotions about whatever we're talking about. Whereas the families that are healthy, you don't really share all your emotions. You say, Pastor, why are you saying this? Please look at me. If you come from an enmeshed family, I would recommend you not get married. And I would recommend if you're married, you better do something about your problems. Because they don't get better. By the way, it is fundamentally anti-Christian, anti-biblical for a parent to share their emotions with their children. I saw a woman up here that was going through a divorce 6-8 years ago. She had a girl that was this tall. By the way, the age of yours, she was telling her daughter everything about how evil her husband was. And I remember the words she said, and I would have knocked her into next week if it had been a man. She says, my daughter can handle it. Yes, she can, at 4 years old. How's that going to look when she's 16? Enmeshment. In your notes, there's too much knowledge of each other. And when I mean too much knowledge, you get in an enmeshed family, they're talking about things that I don't talk to anybody about. Anybody, and they're sharing it at the dinner table. Bathroom habits. You're like, you say, are you mad? No. Do you understand what I'm trying to get at? Folks, I want your marriage. This is all about your marriage. I want you to go forward. But until you acknowledge where you're at, you don't go anyplace. You keep circling the drain. You keep demonizing the other person. If you grew up in one of these families, this does it's not irreparable, because God can change it. But it's irreparable apart from the grace of God and truth. Weirdest thing, you get in a family and they're talking about what they do in the bathroom, and I'm like, I thought that was private, personal. Not in a dysfunctional family. There's inappropriate parent-to-child sharing. Specifically of adult stuff. I had a woman show up in my office about 10 years ago. She showed up with her two girls that were in this school at the time talking about her husband when there are two girls present. And I'm like, honey, don't you think this is abnormal? Sharing with your girls that are barely teenagers? Well, let me ask you, how do you think those girls' attitude towards men are today? And by the way, this person thinks everybody's evil except her. Of course. I'm normal. Everybody else is abnormal. Wow. These are the concepts you find. Pulled in, guarded, cut off, forded up. I'm using all terms. When I came here at this church 15 and a half years ago, and if some of you know who I'm talking about, you can go call them, okay? I found a family right away that something was wrong with Dad. Because he had a daughter that I was sure he had had sex with. He had two younger daughters that looked like he was having sex with them. He had two boys that were so messed up. By the way, they're online. They still claim our school as they live their gay lives. What happens when you try to talk to the mother about this? The religious mother that always went to Camp Joy every family conference. What does the mother do? Somebody tell me. Circles the wagons and moves to North Carolina. By the way, folks, don't kid yourself. Here's the problem. Some of us came from families like that. Some of us have elements of this. This isn't about you. This isn't me condemning you. This is just us saying, you know, this is where we're at. What are we going to do about it? Where are we going with this? Are we just going to... I can give you 50 Christian books that talk about a bunch of religious blather that never talk about what's going on. Until you step back and you start remembering and saying, oh my goodness. And then you start pulling from Scripture the word of His grace that is able to deal not with generic stuff but with these issues. And then you start moving forward. You start dealing with reality. You start dealing with what's happening. And all of it, then you can see growth. You can start forgetting. You can start reaching forth. But until you do that, you just keep circling the drain. In your notes. This comes directly from somebody that told me these exact words. you will find verbatim family stories. Pastor Kwok, when you have a problem in the school and you pull three kids into your office and they all have exactly the same story, does that make you nervous? You think what? Yeah, you think they got together and they rehearsed. Yeah. Another word that we've already, this is a different word for the same concept, is no individuation. Normally in families, a family is made up of individuals who share a family, love each other, argue, fight, reconcile, deal with stuff in many different ways. Of course, secrets. Oh my goodness. By the way, if you want to write something down behind this, and this is in the Christian world, you start getting a lot of Christian lies. I don't know what else to call them, and I know Pastor Warren is brutal about this stuff. You know why? I've seen people go to the marriage seminars, and they come back, woo! Because you feel better, but nothing's changed. Because nobody's even talked about anything that's going on. If you grew up in a family where there are secrets, you know what I mean by secrets? Oh, we don't talk about that. I remember talking to a guy. His family had done some genealogical research, and he had a strange name. I'll say Smith, but that wasn't his name, obviously. He had a strange name, and his father had always said, I never knew my father. So the grandfather was out of the picture. He says, going down the road, all of a sudden he was doing some genealogical research, and his strange name, he found another name very close to it in another area, and lo and behold, he found a picture of his dad at his grandfather's funeral. You know, the one that his dad said didn't exist? Well, he found out that his dad had murdered his dad's dad. His grandfather had murdered the grandmother, and there was some murder and suicide, and they just decided that was the family what? We don't talk about that. By the way, if you have secrets in your life, you got problems. Huge problems. If you have things you can't talk about, Next in your notes. There are strong shared experiences, but no analytical discussion. They're not able to step out of the situation and actually analyze what went on. They just have this experience with all these emotions. Obviously, they cannot see the family objectively. Someone who can see the family objectively frightens and threatens everyone in that family. Sharon Vasilovich has a famous statement that I've used many times. She says, in a family like this, it feels like home. So no matter how bad you grew... By the way, did you all hear what Jacob Cohen said about his family? Thought it was normal. He thought it was normal for a dad to see his kids 2 hours a year. He thought it was normal for mom never to love him. Was it? I'll ask that again. Was it? Feels like home, folks. When you're in this kind of a... That's the reason Pastor Warren is spending all this time talking about how you know one of the things that will keep you from moving forward. History. Oh, my goodness. I say in your notes, sharing only in the extremes. Either they share nothing, or do I need to explain what TMI means? Do you know the kind of people that you meet and the first thing they do is tell you about, I mean, you haven't even gotten their name. I talked to a woman like this one time. She came up to me. I had never met her before, and she started telling me how she'd been sexually molested as a kid. And I just kept backing up. It's like, lady, I would prefer to know your name before you start giving me this much information. Because they don't know how to deal with this. Can I want to give you one last statement. Please look at me. If your family has lots of secrets, please look at me. They're really not secrets. To anybody with an eye to see, they're obvious. And you reveal them all the time by either not talking about them are talking about them too much. All right. That was the most painful thing Pastor Warren can say. Now we're going to move on and be nice. Now this isn't, I don't know if it's nicer or not, but we're going to talk about ability. We're talking about factors that factor in to our starting points. And there are certain factors that definitely factor in to where we begin. Some people start in good places. Some people start in bad places. Sometimes the one is way worse than the other for various factors. We've talked about personality. We have talked about history. And I want to say again, folks, to me, this is one... I meant to bring it down today. There's one book. I still have it in my office. It's in a hardbound copy. Some people in this room have read the newer one that revolutionized my life as a young man, that helped me deal with some of the... My family, was it dysfunctional? Elements? Yes, elements of my father not knowing how to relate to any of us. I don't think anybody in my family likes my dad. We like him as an old man. But when he was young, violence was... I grew up around violence. You understand violence? I'm talking about getting hit. I'm talking about from a man. I grew up with that. How did I deal with that? Well, as a young man, I got to the place where nobody was going to hit me, and I know how to hit real well. Then you have to get to the place where you think, well, that's pretty stupid. Yes? Little book, hardbound, got it in my office. Printed in 1976, published in 1970. It's called, in those days, Dare to Discipline. Today it's called The New Dare to Discipline. Reading that book revolutionized me, and I'm not a good father, Amy. I wanted to get it out of the way early. John is more reserved sometimes. By the way, I recognize dysfunction, do you? Well, now we're going to talk about a third concept, and this is easy but hard. One of the things that will affect us all is our abilities. We're just going to read the one text for time. Paul writes, "For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think," what? "According as God has dealt to every man, every individual, the measure of faith." 1 Peter also talks about as being good stewards of the manifold grace of God, otherwise what God has given us. As I say in your notes, not all of us have the same ability. You say, why does ability affect this? As I say in your notes, this is not something to be embarrassed about, but to face soberly as Scripture requires. Since the Bible commands us to think about this soberly, I would assume we would think about it soberly. You know, we would know who we are. One factor, and by the way, all three of these factors kind of work together that factor into marriage. Let me say it this way. Maybe you know this, maybe you don't. It was on Fox News this week and AOL News this week. One of those studies. It's one of those studies that says the obvious. People, higher the level of academics you have, the better you do in marriage. I could have told you that already. Does that mean people that are uneducated don't do well in marriage? Well, my mom and dad's been married a long time. And my dad went all the way to third grade. Sometimes he went back and forth, I think, a couple times after that, but he never finished anything. Mom went to 11th grade. You say IQ? Oh, yeah. IQ, academic record, has a huge impact on marriage. Doesn't mean you can't have a bad marriage on the other side, but it impacts. We'll talk about that. First thing that impacts it is IQ. And by the way, did you choose your IQ? Anyone? Did you go through line and say, I don't want that one? Now, I hate to say the obvious. You need to remember that 50% of people are average and below. Did you know that? By the way, if you want to get people angry in today's culture, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, talk about IQ. Because I had a lady in this church tell me that she's a genius. She's told some of you she's a genius. How's that been working out? Answer the question. How's that been working out? How's her kids? By the way, don't ever come up to me and tell you you're a genius. There's no geniuses in here, okay? None. There's only one person. I mean, you know, we read Revelation, a number that no man can count, but we do have Carrie Hall. She might be a genius. The rest of us probably aren't. You know, when you look at IQs, You know, somewhere between 80 and 120, it's probably like 90 to 95% of humanity. So when somebody comes up and says, I have 163 IQ, I just smile. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you realize 97 to 99% of PhDs that have ever won an award have an IQ of about 120? So when somebody tells you, I have 163, I just smile. But here's the bad news. Some of us, none of you, of course, none of you, some of us are over here in the 80, 90, I mean, average is, now, I won't tell you any more than that, but we'll move on. The vast majority of people have an IQ between 90 and 110. That's where the big grouping is. I asked a question, do you know your mental ability? Do you really know your mental ability? Now, I can give you a book, and I'll let you read a book. I have two good books. If you would like to read them, it'll demonstrate your mental ability. And if that doesn't work, Carrie Hall just wrote a paper. What's it in, Mike? How much of it did you read? You read her name in the title of the paper, right? Because I remember Klaus Gernoth, he's a physicist in England now, he was working on his second PhD in physics. He said, you ought to read my doctoral work, my first PhD. I said, okay. He handed it to me and said, well, first of all, Klaus, it's in German. What did you think I'm going to do with this? Then I realized the German was easier than the math. Come on, folks. I'm a rocket scientist. Okay. I'm going to give you something that will tell you about IQ in a minute. Before I do that, would you skip down to the highlighted darkened part right beneath this? Here's really where I want you to go and to stay. How smart do you have to be? Are you ready for this? You have to be smart enough. Or maybe, how about this, and I'm doing a Bob Jones Senior paraphrase. Smart enough to borrow brains. If you find yourself not one of the smartest people that ever drew breath, there's lots of good Christian material of people that, please hear me, are smarter than you. Or at the very least smarter than you in that area. And guess what you can do? You can learn a whole lot from other people. But I got a problem. I think the farther this direction you go, the more this you become. I would say if your IQ is 100 to here, you rarely, if ever, try to read a book. Because why would you read a book? You know everything. Sharon Vasilovich, not a dumb person. Did you know that? Do you know that? I can guarantee you, she's pretty far over on the right side. I guarantee you. Do you know she reads books? I mean, academic books on education constantly. Yet people that are geniuses, they don't need to read stuff like that because they're a genius. Can I tell you something, folks? Bob Jones Sr. says you can, somebody tell me, you can borrow brains, but here's the bottom line. If you're not the most brightest person, and by the way, if you realize vast majority are 90 to 110, well, I want to get out here where there's some really smart people, and I want to steal all the brains I can get. Because ability affects things. If your mind is not real sharp and you're getting an argument with your spouse, what happens when your spouse can outthink you? That's exactly what's going to happen. It comes name-calling, crying, yelling, screaming, doing this. But you know what you can do? You can actually learn a process of reasoning, no matter what your intelligence is within reason. Should I even talk about this? You can borrow brains, but you can't borrow character. And my guess is some folks don't have much character to borrow the brains. Therefore, their relationships don't go very far because why would I need that? He needs that. Or she needs that. Well, I would think if your marriage is struggling, I don't care how brilliant you think you are, you might want to do some other work. I go back up above that. I say, do you know your mental ability? And how would you know? Well, one suggestion is to know what you talk about. I think you can tell your mental ability in a very short time. Or, which is even more helpful, have another person note what you talk about most of the time. This would be a great indicator, an indication. You know the old joke. Great minds, average minds, poor minds, and Ralph Warren's extra, the poorest minds. And I want to say this, there is no, over time, there's no exceptions to this. Average minds talk about events. They talk about what's going on. By the way, you notice this word? Average minds. They talk about electricity going out. They talk about price of gas. They talk about how long it took them to get. They just talk about what's going on, events. Poor minds talk about themselves. Excuse me, not themselves. That's not what I meant. How did I write it? People. May I ask you a question? What is most of television filled with? Do you realize I was watching the morning, one of those morning, I thought they were news programs. They now have one of those women that was on one of those gossipy programs as one of the reporters now. And guess what she does on the news program? Gossip. Do you realize in this room, most of you could tell me who just broke up as a couple? But you couldn't tell me anything you've read. Folks, over time, your mind reflects itself about what it talks about. Some people talk about what's going on around them. Some people talk about people. Of course, the poorest minds, they just talk about themselves. And usually how wonderful they are. Great minds talk about ideas. If I want to talk about ideas in this room, I can talk to Walt immediately. I can talk to Pete Vasilovich about any ideas. By the way, Pete, some of you don't even know who he is. Most of you don't even know this guy was in like a PhD program for research psychology. Most of you don't know he's a very brilliant man. And if you want to talk about just about any ideas, go talk to him. Other people, I already know. I can maybe talk about this, but if I'm not careful, I'm talking about this. Now you say, are you being mean? Please hear me. The danger of what I'm doing right now is some of you aren't listening to what I'm saying because you're starting to get defensive. If you do not have as much ability as the next person, borrow the brains. God puts us all in the body for a reason. Yes? Think about yourself. Look at me soberly. If I'm going to pick colors, which I pick the colors of the chairs upstairs, actually, it was Cheryl. I borrowed somebody that has good color sense. Do you understand? Does that make me lesser of a person? You can borrow brains, but you can't borrow character. I think Bob Jones Sr. said that a long time ago. I think it still works. In your notes. Obviously, self-awareness is a big issue. And obviously, advanced academic education is a big issue. You say, why is that? By the way, not because you're smarter than other people. It's not that. I say in your notes, exposure to advanced academic work of higher education will make a huge difference. High-level academics tend to make ideas much less, hear the word, personal, emotional and dangerous, and much more open to and for discussion. Everyone look at me. If Sharon Vasilovich comes into my office tomorrow morning, and she says, Pastor Warren, Pastor Kowak and I have been reading. He took a course at Bob Jones, a master's degree course, and we have decided the next thing we need to do in the school is to go from blackboards to whiteboards because we eventually want to go to, what are those funky things called? Interactive whiteboards. I want you to look at me. You do realize my first thought won't be throwing a fit. My second thought won't be, we're not going to do that. How about you? Some of you need to read a Jim Duncan book, Who Moved My Cheese? But you don't need just to read the book. You need to understand what the book's about. Because some of us, academics does something for you. It makes things less personal. The more I read, the more I'm able to set things out there So when Tim comes up with this crazy idea, his ideas are crazy. Sharon's are always good. I'm not stupid. By the way, the first idea is not angry emotions. But folks, some of us, we don't have much academics, real academics. Some of us don't have any self-awareness. So when somebody comes in and says, you know, we're going to change to white. Hold it. I don't care about whiteboards at school. This is how we relate in relationships, too. So when the husband comes in and says, how about less? Or the wife comes in and says, do you understand what I'm saying? Please listen to me. You need to think about your personality. You need to think about your history. You need to think about your ability. And I want to say this again. If your ability is not as great as someone else's, that's not a problem, because you can borrow brains. As long as you're not, but if you're arrogant, I got to say this. The worst funeral I ever did was in St. Louis. Somebody I didn't know, a family came to me. I think it was Bob and Lynn, some relative or friend. They come to me and they say, Pastor, will you do this funeral? I say, I guess. I go down to this funeral. This guy is a stone-cold drunk. He's a drunkard, and every single one of his friends were from the tavern. Please look at me. The most arrogant, filled-with-themselves group I ever met was that group of drunks. Because small minds are very arrogant and don't do well with change. And don't do well with ideas, because everything is personal. It's mine. Can I be honest with you? No, it's not. Whiteboard, blackboard, interactive board, who cares? I'm going to do the same kinds of things, and I can use any of them. Look on the last page, please. Obviously, opportunity is a big factor that fits into here. You say opportunity for what? Everybody in this room, you have heard things in the last 3 weeks that you have never heard in a church in America. I already know this. This is not talking about me. You're not going to hear this any other place. Just here. You had opportunity to hear things. What will you do with them? Some of you have had opportunities to observe people. Some of us haven't. By the way, opportunity factors into relationships. The last factor, and this is the factor that gets ugly, is just good old sin, depravity, and wicked choices and their consequences. So here we are. Please look at me. Here we are. Husband and wife. We're moving forward, but we feel like we never go anyplace. Somebody needs to grow up. Somebody needs to quit demonizing the other person. And the one doing the demonizing is almost always the person with the problem. It's usually a problem of history. Sometimes, unfortunately, the history and the ability get warped together. Say, can we change? I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Nay, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through Him that loved us. But you will go no place digging in, setting up, lying, because as Jesus says, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Father, thank you for your word and implications as we've been talking about today in the last 3 weeks. The implications of all of what we saw in Jacob's life. Bless, help, encourage. Help us not to get caught up in the details, but to understand we're talking about relationships and the things that factor in to keep us from moving in the place you want us to go. And Father, by your grace and by your Spirit, may we truly forget those things which are behind and reach forth unto those things which are before. May it be true of all of us, in Jesus' name.